Hey, WAIF Cincinnati. Good evening, I'm Chris.
No Puccini?
Puccini.
You have any Puccini or Puccini. Or some other Italian opera guy?
No, Wagner. Wagner.
He's German. Wagner. You don't have any Italian opera? Yeah, any good
cares?
Opera?
Who cares about Italian
opera? That stuff where they actually sing? Instead of just scatterwall?
Let's try it again.
I'm like a great Huns. And I'm Rob.
Together we are
the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
On WAIF 88.FM, the bottom of your dial. You can go no lower than us, 88.3 FM. The phone number is 749-1444. Tonight, Rob and I are going to talk to a very esteemed guest, the former governor of New York and one of the greatest Democrats that ever lived, Governor Mario Cuomo from New York State.
You know, four men were governor of New York and then went on to claim the presidency.
Who were those four men? Those four stellar individuals, and were they Democrats?
Grover Cleveland, Theodore Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, and way back, Martin Van Buren. Mario Cuomo thought he'd be the fifth New York governor to become president. Didn't happen.
Marty Van Buren, eh?
The good old Marty. Cuomo was born in Queens, June 15th, 1932, to immigrant parents. He grew up working in the family grocery store. He has no memory of his childhood, no play. All it was school and the store. He said his earliest memory, a box of macaroni. He went to St. John's University.
Whoa, 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 slow down. What's this about a box of macaroni?
He worked in this grocery store, putting them on the shelves. You know, it could have been Cheerios, could have been cornflakes, but it was a box of macaroni.
Here, is this better? This is German, but it's Mendelssohn.
You don't have any, I don't know. What's another Italian opera guy there?
Here, how about Vivaldi? You like Vivaldi?
Where's he from?
Vivaldi was from Italy. He was
there
a redhead, too.
Yeah.
Here, this is Vivaldi. Vivaldi on the organ.
There you go. I like that.
Okay. Continue, Rob.
Well, it's probably still Wagner. I'm just too stupid to know. But Cuomo went to St. John's University, 1949. He went in on a triple major on an academic scholarship. He had an athletic scholarship to Hofstra University in New York. He passed on it. Then in 1951, he was drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates and assigned to their Class D baseball team. He signed for a $2,000 bonus, which he used to buy Matilda, his girlfriend, a ring.
You think he knows Clemente?
Matilda still wears that ring.
To this day?
Yep. Very well may have. He got married in June of...
Clemente was the greatest Pittsburgh Pirate that ever lived. Huns Wagner.
I think Honus Wagner may have something to say about
Huns
that.
Huns Wagner and Roberto Clemente.
Hungser.
Yeah. Continue, Robert.
Yeah, these mispronunciations are cute.
These mispronunciations are a trademark of the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
To continue with, we're setting up an interview with Mario Cuomo that we did here exclusively for WAIF. Then he went to St. John's Law School in 1956. You know, he started doing like assistant judgeships and all that kind of boring legal stuff. 1977, he ran for mayor of New York City when squashed. He ran for lieutenant governor in 1978. He won. 1983, he was elected governor of New York State, where he served until 1994. He came into national attention for his stunning speech at the 1984 Democratic Convention in San Francisco. That's where you first heard of him and was first energized by Mario M. Cuomo.
And all the Democrats all together said, wowza.
They said many huzzas, huzzas and cheers.
Here, is this better, Rob?
It's better.
That's Italian. It's by Nino Rota.
There we go.
Nino Rota, based on a theme by Giuseppe Verdi.
Verdi?
Verdi. You know who Verdi is?
Yeah.
He was a Verdi good opera composer way back in Italy in the old days, in the 1800s.
Can you believe that?
Continue, Rob.
Yeah, but if he didn't have any money, he would have been a Baroque composer.
Oh, my God. All right, continue, Robert.
I am through setting up the interview with Mario M. Cuomo. He's now a talk show host and a lawyer in New York City.
Well, let's give him a call then. What do you say?
Sure, let's ring him up.
Governor Cuomo's office, good afternoon.
Hello, this is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show in Cincinnati, Ohio. Could we please speak with Governor Cuomo?
Your name again is?
The Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. I'm Chris Comer.
Okay, one moment, please.
you wait a minute while they go look for the governor. So while we're on hold, we'll listen to a little more Wagner.
Hello.
Hello, Governor Cuomo.
Hiya, Chris. How are you?
Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And together we are the
Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
We're calling you from Cincinnati, Ohio. How you doing tonight, sir?
Very well. I'm not sure I can match your energy and ebullience, but I'm here.
Well, why can't you match our energy? What you been doing this afternoon?
I think you guys are probably younger than I am, and I've been working since 7 o'clock this morning. And it's that can be tough here in New York.
Well, what you been working on today, sir?
Well, starting early this morning, I was working on a public offering, and then I was working on a charitable cause for some people who were trying to put together a new foundation. And then I was talking to some representatives of the government of Cuba about the embargo and the Helms-Burton bill.
Well, do you know Fidel?
I do know President Castro, and spent an hour and a half with him before he spoke to the United Nations recently, his last trip here. I remember when he came dressed like an American civilian instead of in his military garb.
Well, now, what's your opinion on his military garb? Do you think he looks better and more convincing dressed as a civilian?
I think he looked more acceptable to an American population dressed as a civilian than he would dressed as Che Guevara.
And he did that on purpose, didn't he, in order to make us accept him a little more?
I think everybody does what they have to do to be accepted by the audience they've chosen for themselves, even you guys.
Yeah.
And that's what he was doing, surely, and that's what I try to do. I mean, you try to accommodate the people you're trying to reach.
So should we lift the embargo on Cuba?
I think it's a question that certainly ought to be debated by Americans in a knowledgeable way. I think most of us do not know a lot about the issue. For example, when people hear that the embargo by the United States against Cuba is not shared by any member of the United Nations. None of our allies anywhere in the world agree with us, and they're all doing business with the Cubans. The net result that only Americans are denied the benefits of investing in Cuba.
Well, then if only America will not trade with Cuba, how is our lack of trade with Cuba hurting Cuba? Can't they get stuff from the other countries?
What it does politically is give President Castro a whipping boy. Whatever failures there are in the Cuban economy, and they are enormous, because when the Soviet Union collapsed and when the Cold War ended and the Russians were not capable of keeping Cuba's economy alive as it did for so many years, its economy went on the rocks. Now Fidel Castro can blame it on the United States of America, which is, of course, the economic Goliath of the world, because the United States is embargoing and is now threatening to punish all other nations that do business with Cuba. This is like the Arab embargo of Israel. And it's a complicated issue. I think you can make a very good case for the fact that while we disapprove of what Castro has done, we disapprove of his appropriations, we disapprove of whatever acts of terrorism he's been guilty of, the way to cure the situation is not to allow us to be the whipping boy, but to demonstrate for them, for the people of Cuba, the strength of a real democracy by showing them our goods and wares. Let them eat at McDonald's once. Let them enjoy the products of this country.
Well, we can do better than McDonald's, can't we?
Well, I don't know. McDonald's pretty good for me. I mean, you may be high class. You may be a Lutece type. I don't know.
Is it a Democratic thing that you guys all go in for McDonald's, you and Bill Clinton?
Is Bill Clinton a McDonald's guy? I thought he liked pizza.
Well, he likes all that junk food.
Yeah. Well, most of us do, I think.
So I think you would advocate lifting the embargo on Cuba, and that would be in the best interest of America. Is that
I think there
assumption?
Are things you ought to extract from the Cuban government before you do it. But
cigars.
I think we certainly should consider negotiating.
Do you think Castro would be into, like, we could swap him some Louisville Sluggers for some cigars?
And well, that's not a bad idea. He's very much a baseball fan. What people don't know is he's... He's more a basketball aficionado than he is a baseball fan, although everybody remembers him pitching in baseball. In the 60s and 70s, he was playing basketball at the university. I think he might consider releasing political prisoners, more political prisoners, and things like that, much as the Soviets released refuseniks. So anyway, it's the kind of thing I spent the day with today, and a lot happened. I enjoyed it, frankly.
Former Cincinnati Red Tony Perez was the last Cuban baseball player to come out of Cuba and play in the American Major Leagues. Do you think Tony Perez should be in the Hall of Fame?
I think he was a great player. You'd have to know who gets excluded when he gets included. I mean, who he's being compared to. But he was a great player, and I can't imagine anybody complaining about Tony Perez in the Hall of Fame, wherever he came from.
What about Pete Rose?
Yeah, I do not agree that Pete Rose ought to be denied his baseball legacy because he did something wrong. We all do something wrong. Some of us get caught, but we all do things wrong. We all sin seven times a day. Some of the sins you get caught at, and some you don't. So the notion of making a moral condemnation of Pete Rose and saying you gambled or you did whatever you did, therefore we're going to deny you this luster, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
So
it's not fair, it's not intelligent.
Could you provide us with a soundbite then, like from Mario Cuomo, I think Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame?
Well, from a baseball fan who has been a baseball fan all his life and who understands sinning and non-sinning, I think Pete Rose should be held up to the youth of America as a great, great baseball player and not be thought of as a saint or sinner.
All right. Now, since you've left public office, has anyone approached you with the idea of becoming the new commissioner of baseball?
That subject was raised by a couple of owners and a couple of other people, yes.
So what do you think? Will you do it?
I think the baseball owners do not want a commissioner. They want an agent. A commissioner in the sense of someone who has the authority to disagree with the owners and to make judgments that would cost them money, as a matter of fact, is not what they want, and I can understand that. They have billions and billions of dollars of property over the decade when you add up all the money they can make. They don't want somebody who can jeopardize that for them. So they don't want objectivity. They don't want fairness and impartiality, much as, you know, the American people kind of naturally think, gee, wouldn't that be great to have a Judge Landis doing this? Well, they can't afford a Judge Landis.
Can they afford Mario Cuomo?
No, well, not as a commissioner. They wouldn't want somebody as like me as commissioner. Again, they want somebody to speak for their interests, to speak with some kind of objectivity, to do it the way David Stern does it. But David Stern is a brilliant, brilliant corporate lawyer who has made the owners of the basketball franchises richer than they ever were, and the players richer at the same time. He is not, however, setting records for reducing the prices at basketball games for ordinary fans.
We're talking to Governor Mario Cuomo on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. If you were to offer some advice to the baseball owners and the baseball players as a fan on how to get over some of their financial problems, some of the other problems that led to the strike last year...
Well, they don't have any financial problems. They don't have financial problems, let's be honest. The owners are in it either as a matter of vanity or because they're getting richer than they were. Look, George Steinbrenner can afford a $53 million payroll. He didn't have any problems.
Then why did we miss the World Series a year ago, and why might we miss
another
one?
Because they want still more wealth than they're getting. They don't have problems. They have desires. And if I had any advice for the players and for the owners, it would be, look, this is a free enterprise system, and God bless you. If you can make $20 million for hitting .212, that's good for you. But if you're interested in the game and keeping it alive, don't take your eye off the ball. And the ball is that kid who sits in the bleachers and all the other people who come to games or watch them on television. Remember the fans. Shock everybody. Announce that you're going to have a huge new program for kids. The kids in America are not playing baseball the way they used to. You're going to have fewer and fewer minority people working their way up into the major leagues because they don't play baseball anymore. They're all playing basketball. Baseball used to be an absolute staple in the neighborhoods. You used to take a ball and tape it up and play a game with it. That's how important it was that you'd play with a taped ball. That's all gone. So you better reach back down to those kids. Do some things in the daytime. Have some World Series games in the daytime. But spend some money encouraging kids to play baseball. Have a real promotional campaign for baseball. Look at what the NBA does with basketball. I mean, magnificent the advertising they're doing. And go back down to the rural areas and to the city streets and see if you can bring back baseball.
Don't you think the players
every once in a while have a freebie day? Every once in a while, let the players and the owners get together and say, we're going to give up a couple of $100,000 this year to have freebie days for kids. Bring them into the Don Park, load the place up, give them some popcorn, and pretend that it's 1945.
Well, don't you think the player salaries are a little bit through the roof, too?
Don't I think that artist salaries are through the roof and the corporate executives who get $20 million for a business that goes bankrupt are through the roof? That's the free enterprise system. That's America. You do what you can do. The salaries are determined by the fans. Nobody else. The owners don't determine the salaries, and the players don't determine the salaries. The fans determine the salaries. If they want to watch Michael Jordan enough so that he's worth $40 million, then it's the fans who determine that he's worth $40 million. In television and in attendance at the live, etc. So we get what we deserve in this democracy. If you want to continue to pay corporate executives $10, $15, $20 million while 50-year-old workers are getting downsized, then that's what you get. So we get what we deserve, we get what we demand, we get what we ask for. You cannot blame this on the players and the owners. Because if the fans didn't want it, they'd stop going to the games, they'd stop watching the television, and as soon as you did that, everything would change. They'd start, you know, settling for $100,000 a year.
In that case, what do you think about all these NFL franchises moving all over the Dablon place?
I think someday a city should condemn, use the power of eminent domain. You know what the power of eminent domain is?
Explain it to us.
It is the power of every government to take property for the public use. It is as fundamental as government itself. For example, if you need to build a dam to save a valley, you can condemn the land that's held by private people in order to build a public dam, and that's been done. If you need to have a road, you can condemn the front porch of a whole neighborhood of houses in order to widen a road. These are concededly public uses. In recent years, the Supreme Court said you could condemn private property in Washington, D.C. to beautify the area because it was ugly and a lot of the buildings, old tenements, had been allowed to slip into disrepair and deterioration. So they took them down and replaced them and made the owners replace them. Now, when you use the power of eminent domain, which is the power of the people through their government, to take something for a public use, you have to pay for it. Under the Constitution, you have to pay just compensation. So these ball teams in some towns and cities are very much public uses. They're more than just private enterprises. They keep hundreds of businesses alive. They are vital to the city. Sometimes the city has invested all kinds of money in roads and bridges and other things to make the thing work. And one of these days, Oakland tried it once, but it was handled badly from a legal point of view, I thought. One of these days, somebody is going to say, we're going to condemn this team by eminent domain. We're going to pay you what it's worth. You say the franchise worth $100 million. We say it's worth 70. Let's go to court and get it decided. Anyway, it's now ours. Now it belongs to the city. We're going to bring in, or the town, or the village, or the county, or whatever. Now we're going to bring in private management to make sure it's managed correctly. We're going to sell shares to the population. Anybody who wants, we're going to sell $5 shares, $100 shares. We're all owners. It's ours. So let's come and watch them play because we own these guys.
Maybe Cleveland should have bought the Browns.
It's an interesting notion, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. We shift gears a little bit here and start talking about politics.
Incidentally, it's better than having people come to the government and say, look, we're private. We're worth $200 million, but we want you to build our stadium at your risk with your taxpayers' money, and we'll pay your rent that doesn't give you back your money.
And stick another half a cent tax on, your next six pack of beer.
That's right.
In case you just tuned in, we're talking to the former governor of New York, Mario Cuomo, on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Well, Clinton just proposed his defense budget, $265 billion. Do you think that's too high, low, just about right?
Well, it's obviously too high because it's $7 billion more than the Pentagon asked for. And what happened here is that it would have been a terrific issue for the Democrats, except that Clinton didn't want to take on the defense budget. Why not? Well, there are a lot of reasons why not. Part of the reason is Bosnia. He needed the $1.25 billion or so extra beyond what the Pentagon had originally asked for Bosnia. But another reason is he doesn't want defense to be the issue in this race, and I don't blame him. So now they've gotten rid of the issue, and it costs us $7 billion at the same time that they tell you they have to cut inoculations for poor children. And they can't afford Medicare the way they used to, and they can't afford to take care of disabled children who are sick and poor under the Medicaid program. I mean, if that makes sense to you, that you got to cut the farmers' subsidies, give the state of Ohio and cities like Cincinnati and New York City less money to do all the things that they must do for a lot of people who are in desperate need. We don't have money for all of that. We have a huge, huge debt and deficit, but we can afford $7 billion more than the Pentagon asked us for defense because it's politically useful to us.
Do you think he's kind of cutting his own throat?
Who, Clinton?
Because as he moves more towards the middle, his support will wane because there'll be less difference between him and the Republicans, and so people who would be more inclined to go out and vote for him will just say, it doesn't matter who we get, it's going to be a guy that wants a huge defense budget and just a little bit for social programs.
I think that even with this defense budget, which I'm not happy with, Clinton is so far superior to anything the Republicans are showing that I think at this moment you have to make him a favorite for the presidency. I'm certainly going to support him. I don't like the defense budget, but I'm certainly going to support him because the Republicans are just, to the extent that you can tell what they stand for is not good for America in the long run.
Well, to me, that's
so clear that, it's not even a contest.
Explain to us what the Republicans do stand for, in your opinion, and why it's wrong.
Well, it depends on which Republican. If you're talking about Steve Forbes, who is going to look much better. I predicted yesterday morning from Florida that Dole would win, but it would be a modest victory. Buchanan would run second. Alexander, who has been my dark horse for months, has finally showed up out of the stable.
Now, why is Alexander your dark horse?
Well, because I figured Dole could never, I like Dole, but I figured Dole would get weaker and weaker because as the thing progressed, you'd see in all the polls that he never beats Clinton. It's always 50, 35 or something like that over Dole. And Dole doesn't have the potential for adding anything in August. Do you follow me? I mean, Dole is Dole. He's everything. What you see is what you get. With Alexander, he's new, he's an outsider, he's fresh, he's young, and he could always say, yes, I'm behind in the polls now, but the more you see of me, the more you'll like me. And there is at least a potential for growth in the Alexander campaign that you would not find in the Dole campaign. Now, others I eliminated for different reasons, Buchanan, because he's just too conservative, and I think the Pat Robertson label, which appeals to a lot of people, is going to prove in the long run to retard his reaching the other non-Christian coalition Republicans. Graham, from the beginning, I just didn't see him, meeting the expectations of the American people. He came off a little bit too tough.
And he looks a little bit like E.T., too.
Well, the looks, I'm not one to complain about anybody's looks, but Alexander, as an outsider, as a former governor, as a kind of conservative person, but inoffensive in his conservatism, Forbes, people are going to be tending to read out now, and they shouldn't. He's going to make a comeback in New Hampshire. I don't think he wins in New Hampshire. But he's going to do better in New Hampshire than he did in Iowa. So I think next week you're going to be reading a different story about Forbes than you're reading today. any way. What do they offer? Forbes offers a flat tax, which sounds good the first time you hear it, but then you start analyzing it and get into the details, and you find out it's going to cost the budget $200 billion. It's going to have winners and losers, the rich people being the biggest winners, and a lot of middle-class people being the losers. If you take a deduction on your mortgage, you lose that. If you want to make a charitable contribution, you lose that. And in any event, the budget loses $200 billion. Where are you going to get it? You have all this problem now trying to balance the budget over 7 years. Now you're going to make it $200 billion worse? Who's going to pay that $200 billion? More money from Medicare? More money out of Medicaid? More money out of kids? More money out of education? More money out of roads and bridges? It doesn't make any sense. What are the other Republicans offering you? Nothing. The country had... Look,
nothing at all.
Well, here, let's be specific. Let's be specific, and you tell me if I'm wrong.
Nada.
Tell me if I'm wrong. You have two problems in this, the strongest country in world history, still the strongest, still the greatest, but two problems. One, an economy that's very good for owners and investors. Dow Jones average setting records regularly. And if you invested in mutual funds last year, you made 30%. So if you're an owner or investor, you're in great shape. If you're a top-of-the-line, high-skilled worker, you're probably in pretty good shape. But if you are one of the 61% of our workers who are moderate or low-skilled, you're in big trouble, baby. You're either getting downsized, kicked out, reduced in the amount of work you can do, your health care is going down, your wages have gone nowhere but down gradually over the last 3 years. The gap between working people at the bottom half of the middle class and the top is wider than it has ever been in modern history in this country, and wider than any industrial nation. Now, that's a problem. That's the economy. The second problem, a lot of poor people, a lot of them children, a lot of them in ghettos, but not all of them, hopeless, despairing, drug addicted, going to jail instead of to school, getting AIDS instead of diplomas, a serious problem. Now, you tell me what the Democrats or, for that matter, the Republicans or, for that matter, the Democrats are doing about those two problems. On the economy, they're saying, we'll give you a tax cut. No kidding. I'm 50 years old. I've just been downsized out of my job. You're going to give me a tax cut? I'm 54 years old, a woman. They just reduced my salary. I'm working only 4 days. You're going to give me a tax cut, and that's the answer to my problem? It can't be the answer to the problem. You're importing 140,000 immigrants who are high-skilled people because we can't train our own people to those skills, and you say you're going to solve that with a tax cut? And what are you doing for the problem of the baby making babies? Shouting at her, cursing her, telling her you're not going to pay for the food for the baby she gives? You think that's going to stop her? If she was susceptible to that kind of easy instruction, she wouldn't have had the baby in the first place. That's not the answer. You have your son announced to be a drug addict at the age of 19, or your daughter announced to be anorexic, and tell me how you would handle her. Shout at her, make a speech on responsibility, or would you try to find a way to solve the problem?
Get a little professional help.
All right. Now, so all this tough talk about you just don't get it, you mushy-headed liberals. You've got to have a sense of responsibility. I know that. I know you have to have a sense of responsibility. You also have to have a little hope. You also have to think that there's a point in going to school, a point in waiting to get married, a point in trying to do it right, that there is a road out there that'll lead you to something worthwhile. And when kids don't have that, then they wind up the way the kids are winding up now. Neither party is answering those problems. What we're really doing is turning our back on them because they're so hard. But the Democrats, at least, every once in a while, will suggest to you that the problem exists. What we ought to be doing, education, education, education. You ought to be the best educated country in the world, and you're not even close. We should do for education what Kennedy did for space. We shouldn't be going to school 180 days. We should be going 220 like some of the other places. We shouldn't be struggling with calculus. We should be like Japan, where 94% of the students are adept at calculus when they get out of secondary school. So, I say they're doing nothing, and I say the Democrats are doing a little bit more, and that's why I'm a Democrat.
Amen, brother. In case you just tuned in, we're talking to the former governor of New York State, Mario Cuomo, on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. Now, Mr. Cuomo, Dick Lugar, the governor of, or is he a governor or a senator from Indiana?
Senator from Indiana, great fellow.
He's running for president, and he has this wacky tax idea that'll eliminate personal income tax and tax big business, or all business transactions for that matter. Are you familiar with his tax plan, and what do you think about it?
Yeah, it's not going to work, not because its merits are so clearly deficient, but because it's impossible to get it understood in the course of this race, brief as it is and complicated as it is, but with so many other ideas.
My question now, is, though, would it actually work?
The idea of replacing the income tax with a consumption tax, which is like a sales tax, only a consumption tax operates at every level of the transaction. You know, you cut down the wheat to make bread, and you sell the wheat, and that's a transaction. And then you make it into bread, and that's a transaction. Then you sell it to a distributor, and that's a transaction, and so on and so forth at every stage till it gets to a certain percentage. The consumption of goods instead of income, that's done in many parts of the world, and there are economists who think that that's a very good idea. It raises a tremendous amount of money. But if you're a poor person or a middle-class person who is not, you know, gifted with a whole lot of abundance, and you must spend your money in consuming because you have a large family or you have kids, you have to buy clothes, you have to buy a car to get to work, etc., it can be unfair to you because it makes no distinction whether you're Donald Trump or a guy making $40,000 a year. You pay the same tax. And some people are forced to spend on necessaries, and this creates a tax on that instead of relying on money from income, where the richest people who are most able to pay do the paying. This is a less progressive kind of tax. This evens it out so that even if it's a terrible burden for you, you pay a tax that's easy for me.
This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show on WAIF, and we're talking to Governor Mario Cuomo.
Does it bother you that what should be the core constituents for the Democratic Party, you know, Joe Bag of Donuts, the hard hats, that they seem to be following the Republicans and Rush Limbaugh and guys like that more and more?
Yeah, I think one of the problems we have is the problem of the labels to begin with. Forget Democrats. Forget Republicans. It's all mixed up anyway. Bill Clinton is a Democrat. Mario Cuomo is a Democrat. Bill Clinton's for the death penalty. I abhor it. Bill Clinton is for a tax cut. I think that's a terrible mistake. Bill Clinton gave $7 billion more to the defense budget. I think that's outrageous. Well, then, how come he's a Democrat and I'm a Democrat? Because there are all kinds of Democrats. There are all kinds of Republicans. Mark Hatfield, just retired, a Republican, a great, great man. All the world of difference between him and Jesse Helms, but they're both Republicans. Look in this race. You look at Pat Buchanan. He's a Republican, very, very conservative. That's right. How about Alexander? He's a Republican, but very moderate. How about Dole? If I had to vote for a Republican a few years ago, I said, it would be Bob Dole. Why? Because most of his positions are reasonable. He raised taxes when he had to raise taxes. He's against them when he feels you don't have to raise them. He's for a government that will help you, Medicare, Medicaid. He was for those programs. And he's for cutting government where you can. That sounds very much like a Democrat. So what I would do is say, let's find a way to depreciate the labels. You know, you have some local races where you're not allowed to use a label. You can't be a Democrat, a liberal, a conservative. No political labels. You just run on the issues. I'm Joe Blow. Here's what I say about taxes. You know, no tax cut, no tax increases for the next 5 years. That's my position. Here's what I say about welfare. If you're able to work, you have to work, period. If you're not able to work, if you're guaranteed not able to work, we won't let you starve. That's my idea of welfare. Terrific. You can call it what you want. How do you feel about the death penalty? It doesn't work. It's too expensive. It's degrading and debasing. I'd rather lock him up in a 7.5 by 7. That's tougher on a murderer than any death penalty would be. And you don't have to worry about making a mistake and killing the wrong guy.
It's certainly far more expensive.
To what?
To house a prisoner for the next 50 or 60 years.
Unfortunately, you're dead wrong. The numbers show, for example, in North Carolina, it costs like $2.25 million to execute a prisoner because of our constitutional requirements, and about $800,000 to pay for him for a lifetime. In New York, it's something closer to $1.8 million compared to $850,000. Much, much cheaper to pay for them. See, now, that's a common misperception.
Yeah, and my co-host Rob was shaking his head at me when I asked you that, making me feel the fool.
No, you shouldn't. No.
But that's what everybody thinks.
No, incidentally, you're closer to the common sense of it. And if I didn't have the advantage of having studied it, you know, all these years, and knowing, I would have made the same guess you did. And everybody in my family that's not a lawyer would make the guess that you did. And, you know, just on the face of it, what does it take to give a person a lethal injection? That's what people think. You know, how expensive can it be? You got rid of the guy.
A couple of bucks worth of poison, maybe.
That's right. What they forget is that there's a whole legal process that goes into it. Years and years, and you have to pay for the lawyers and the courts and the time and the prison, etc.
Well, do you think that legal process is just and worth the money that it costs in order to have it there, or do you think that it's a bit of a waste?
It's a principle that you need to contend with, and you have to decide. Here is the principle. You can have one of two kinds of systems. A system that makes it very, very easy to convict guilty people. Very easy. But that, because it's so easy, allows for the possibility that with some frequency you're going to make a mistake and convict an innocent person thinking he or she is guilty. For example, we can say you're presumed guilty. If we indict you, then you have to assume that the government had enough sense and enough evidence to make a proper accusation, so now you're presumed guilty and you have to prove you're innocent. That would avoid a lot of what you have now, which is an occasional guilty person getting away with it. People think O.J. was guilty, but he got away with it. That would have been avoided if O.J. had the burden of proving his innocence instead of you having the burden of proving his guilt. So that's one system, and some places in the world have it. You've got to prove your innocence, I assume your guilt, when the government says you're guilty. Or the second choice. We are so afraid of being oppressed by the king, from whom we revolted in the 18th century. We are so afraid of fascism. We are so afraid of being denied our fairness, our liberty, our freedom, that we want a system that protects the innocent so much that it will allow occasionally a guilty person to slip through the net. That's our democratic system. Which would you prefer? If you want a system that protects the innocent, even if a guilty person gets away occasionally, then you select our system. If you want a different system, then you go to Europe, you go somewhere else, or you have a revolution here, change your constitution, and convert your government into a government that finds it easy to condemn people, even if, with some frequency, innocent people are condemned as well.
Now, Governor Cuomo, you brought up O.J. Simpson. I didn't. But do you think he did it? And do you think it's really any of our business, unless we're jurors or are intimately involved in the case, whether or not he did or not?
As a matter of your human impulse, you're going to guess whether he did it or not. As a matter of living intelligently in this system, it's probably better to do what you suggested, which is, hey, look, I'm going to leave that to God, because I can't know with absolute sureness whether he did it or he didn't. I can't know with absolute sureness, whether he was the guy who slashed and tore at these people or not. And so I'll let God decide that. I'll settle for whatever the jury says.
And besides, you and I got better things to think about anyway, don't we?
Well, it's an important thing to think about, you know, whether he did it or not.
Yeah,
it's
but spring training's going to start.
You can't tell. You'll never know. And so I settle for what the jury says, and I leave the other judgment to God.
Okay, Governor Cuomo, what the heck was I going to ask? I can't even remember.
You were going to remind Governor Cuomo that this is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show on WAIF.
Yeah, okay, you're doing a talk show now, that's right?
That's right.
A year ago, or 18 months ago, you were governor of New York. How have you adjusted this big transition? Do you miss being governor?
I miss the feeling when you wake up in the morning that today I'll have all kinds of opportunities to do good and important things. Now, I know I screwed them up yesterday, and I know I botched them up, and I probably will again today, but there's a chance to do something good for a kid. There's a chance to pass a law that will take care of a lot of sick people. There's a chance to be there at the World Trade Center when the act of terrorism occurs and to say the right things and to help marshal the forces to get us back on our feet. There's a chance to save those guards from the inmates at Ossining when they seize 16 guards and hold them as hostages. There's a chance to pass a good law, to cut the taxes, to inspire some kids. I miss that. The difference between that and the private life is easier. You make more money. You have your privacy back, which is very important to me. I didn't like 12 years of being, you know, never alone, no matter where you went, whether it was Tokyo or Teaneck, New Jersey, having two cops with you at all times. I shed that that protection and that interruption of privacy when I left Albany. And so this is easier. This is more comfortable. This is certainly more lucrative, but it's not nearly as satisfying.
Well, I believe it was 1964 when Richard Nixon lost his race for governor, and he was president 8 years later. Are you planning some kind of comeback like that?
No, I'm not planning anything. I'm going to be supporting Bill Clinton this time. There's nothing I'd aspire to. You know, you're governor of the 10th largest economy in the world, New York State. The only larger economy in the world that's not a nation is California. And after being governor for 12 years of a place like that, it's hard to find another political job that seems appropriate to you, except maybe the presidency. But there I'm going to be supporting Clinton. And by the year 2000, when the next one rolls around, I may even be too old to play basketball.
So you're not planning on returning?
I'm not planning anything really politically, but I'm certainly not focused on running for office at all. I'm going to do what I can in my radio show and speeches. I travel around the country, and I wrote a book, and I'm writing another book, and I try to use those devices to share whatever it is I've learned about politics that I think and government that can be useful to the dialogue we should be having in this country. And I do want to do that. I do want to make a contribution, but I'm not planning to do it politically.
So from a couple of talk show hosts to another, how do you like the radio business?
I love it. I always did. I've been doing it for a long, long time. I did it 20 years ago in New York City, ran my own Sunday night show at WMCA for Strauss Communications, Ellen and Peter Strauss, and did a call-in show for the 12 years I was governor, with the constituents calling in all the time. So I like it. I like the intimacy of it. I like the warmth of it. I like the anonymity of it. You know, people, I think some of the warmth and the comfort comes from the fact that people are completely relaxed since they can be totally anonymous when they're talking to you. The radio has always been my favorite medium. I grew up, unlike you guys, I grew up with only radio. There was no television. And I remember the great heroes of radio. I remember Mandrake, and I remember the Lone Ranger, and I remember the Green Hornet. It was the era of imagination. It was the era where you had to paint the pictures in your mind. You had to fill in all the spaces in your mind. You had to imagine it. All you had was sound. And I've never gotten over my love affair with radio.
Are you encouraged or discouraged by the level of awareness and knowledge of the issues that the callers have and the general public has?
Well, I must say, without any reflection on any or any aspersion on any other talk show, because I don't hear them, that the callers I get on Saturday are, I think, probably unusually well prepared and well equipped. I don't know exactly why that is. It may just be the way the show raises questions, etc. But they seem pretty well informed. But even at that, it's obvious that there's an immense gulf of between the knowledge people have and the knowledge they would need in order to make the best possible judgments on what's happening in Washington. For example, the balanced budget. If you say to people, do you think that we should balance the budget, the federal budget, everybody says yes. And then if you say, well, is it like your checkbook at home? And they say, oh, yeah. Is it like the state budget? I mean, your state budget's balanced probably. They say, yeah, same thing. Federal budget should be balanced. And then you say, well, yeah. But at home, you know, you can balance your checkbook while at the same time you have a big mortgage, $150,000 on the house. You don't have to pay that off, right, to balance. No, you just pay the interest on it. Can you do that with the federal government?
Then no.
They say, I assume so. You say, no, it doesn't have a capital budget. What? It doesn't make special provision for that. You have to treat that all cash. Well, how the heck are we going to do that? What if we want to build a $1 billion space station? Yeah, you got to put that in the budget the first year. Well, that's ridiculous. I mean, yeah, that's right. So what should we do? Well, we should have a capital budget provision. Oh, do we have that, Governor? No, we don't have it. Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, I know you didn't know that. See, and that's the kind of thing you have. Death penalty. Most people in this country believe the death penalty is cheaper than life imprisonment without parole. Now, what would happen if you were able to correct that misimpression in everybody's mind? Would it change the vote on death penalty? I bet you it would. And that happens over and over and over again. In the current budget, did you know that the Republicans wanted to take $50 billion out of the pension funds and return it to corporations? What do you mean return it to court? Well, this is money that the corporations put into pension funds to guarantee the pensions would be paid. But the corporations are claiming, you know, you don't really need there, so we'll take the money back. We'll take our word for it, there'll be enough money when your turn comes. If America knew that, they'd be marching on Washington, the pensioners. But they don't know it. Why? Because the thing is so arcane. There's so much information. Washington Post did a poll a couple of weeks ago, which said, really, and this was their conclusion, that the ignorance was a very, very serious problem in this country, the ignorance of voters about the issues.
It manifests itself quite often on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. The ignorance of the population does.
What causes the ignorance? Is it the fault of people?
Is
it that they're just too busy and
it's
just
partially probably the individual, and I think it also probably has to do with the education system and television. I think too many people are happy to watch another episode of Coach or Cheers when they could be doing something else with their lives.
People don't care. They care enough to become half-informed or ill-informed, but they don't care enough to take the time to find out the whole truth.
Well, you see, and I think, guys, that another evidence of that is that even in a presidential race like 1992, you only get 50% of the people who are eligible to vote. And not all the people who could be eligible are eligible. So 50% of the eligible voters is like, I don't know, what, 20% of the whole population?
Pretty small.
And that's all that votes. And in the Republican Revolution, 1994, only 38% of the voters showed up.
Oh, they don't want to talk about that, though.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Governor Cuomo, WAIF is a community station. It's funded in part by the city. And it's always seemed to me that funding for arts has been a traditional role of government going back hundreds and hundreds of years. Yet, you know, the Republicans want to slash funding for the arts in PBS. I was wondering how you felt about that.
It'll kill them. Just tell everybody in the United States that they're against public radio, against public television, against the arts. I don't think Republicans have any idea of how unpopular a position that is, and how the people who are for the arts, who are for public television, public radio, for things like the endowment on the arts, despite its excesses from moment to moment, the people who are for it are so intensely for it that their political force is disproportionate. And I don't think the Republicans have figured that out. So this country wants investment in the arts. It really does. Some people get offended when they see a nude this or this wrongful expression. Wow. But I, I, uh, I think that's a mistake. I think in the long run, near the end of the process, if we ever get to the end of the process, you'll find them moderating their views on those cuts.
We have one last question for you, Governor Cuomo. Okay, it's November. Who is Bill Clinton running against, and who is going to win?
Wild guess. Although I like Lamar as an 8-1 underdog dark horse, I think.
Hey, you got that you got that legal betting in New York, don't you?
That's right.
We don't have that down here.
OTV. I think it's Dole and Kemp. I mean, if he has any sense, he'll pick Kemp. Kemp makes his ticket a lot stronger. Dole and Kemp against Clinton and Gore. It's Clinton and Gore. Never by too big a margin, because, you know, he only won with 43%. But Clinton and Gore win, say, 52-48.
Okay, we sure appreciate you appearing on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, Governor.
And we'll
Cuomo.
Call you back in November to see if you're right or not.
Yeah. Well, if I'm right, call me back. If I'm not, I won't be in.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Bye.
Bye.
Phone lines are now open. 749-1444. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And together we are
the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Did you catch the primaries today, Rob? We didn't even talk to Governor Cuomo about those primaries up in New Hampshire. The fascist Pat Buchanan came in first. Came in number one. The numero uno candidate for the Republicans so far in New Hampshire, after the New Hampshire primary, is the fascist Pat Buchanan, and I bet the Democrats couldn't be happier.
But before we jump into all that, I would just first like to take a moment to thank Mario Cuomo for spending some time with us here at the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show on WIAF, and also thank No Anchovies Pizza on Ludlow Avenue next to the Dirty Movie Theater in Northern Clifton.
Mm-mm. We love that No Anchovies Pizza.
That No Anchovies. You know, they don't just have pizzas. They also have calzones. Damn tasty. No Anchovies on Ludlow. Anchovies rules.
They've been there for over 2 years. So next time you're down there catching a dirty movie at the Esquire, stop on next door for a slice of pie at No Anchovies.
Tuesday evenings from 8 to 10 p.m., tune into WAIF Cincinnati for a more than fine gumbo of Louisiana music. Creole, Cajun, and New Orleans R&B make a wonderful and tasty dessert of ear candy. So join in and taste the low-calorie, high-energy buffet of America's original music. That's Crawfish Fiesta. Catch it only on 88.3 Tuesday evenings from 8 to 10 p.m.
It's a good warm-up to the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. You can get out your gumbo. I mean, it is Fat Tuesday.
Oh, yes, it is. And no longer now, it's Ash Wednesday.
That big party in New Orleans is going down, and I can't think of a better season to party Cajun style than on Tuesday night. Next Tuesday, getting ready for that big old Chris and Rob Late Night. Who we got up next?
We got Charlie.
Yo, Charlie, what's up?
Oh, nothing much. I was very surprised to hear your guest tonight.
Well, we're surprised to hear you, Charlie.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And, I don't know. It's just a really big name. Someone everybody knows.
Mario Cuomo is not too big for the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
He did those Doritos commercials, didn't he?
He did Doritos commercials with Governor Ann Richards, former governor of Texas.
Yeah, yeah.
What was that commercial all about? Something like they had nothing better to do. They were just sitting around the old fireplace eating a bag of Doritos.
Yeah, what do you do now that you're retired and all that stuff? And
puts him right up there with Jay Leno.
Yeah.
And Chris Elliott.
Hey, Rob, when do you think you and I are going to get our own Doritos commercial? We'd be great.
Get out of here.
We'd be great shilling for Doritos, wouldn't we? I'd go, man, Rob, I love that nacho cheese.
Get out of here.
Well, you guys are getting to be pretty big time now, aren't you?
Let's imagine if we were doing Cheetos commercials. I'd be like, Rob, how do you get this yellow crap off your fingers? And Rob would say,
well, you know, because the cheese is oil-based, and it mixes with the oil on your skin, so therefore it's very hard to take the cheese off, although that would not be a strong selling point for Cheetos. So what's going on, Charlie?
Oh, not much. Are you on WLW now, or did you just do a couple of those?
We did one of them.
Pilots?
We did one of them about 3 years ago.
That long ago?
No, actually, it was like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
New Year's Eve, we were doing a show on 700 AM. 700 WLW, and it was like a New Year's Eve party. All of our callers were drunk. So were me and Rob. We were like so drunk, they said we could never be on again.
Oh, what?
I said, Rob, you don't have to drink another tequila. And he said, yeah, I do, man. We're getting ready. Rob was really nervous. He was nervous because we were going to be on a 50,000-watt radio station broadcasting to 38 states, half of Canada, and the Caribbean.
Well, it's weird how some people get their start in this thing. You know that one guy, who's that Jewish guy that's on CKY for the longest time?
Carmine, Chris's close personal friend, Carmine Guzman.
Yeah, he started as a guest at Cunningham or something.
Yeah, I don't know, some weird way.
Yeah, and then they liked him because he was, I don't know, articulate or something, and they decided to have him on as a guest. Aww. And then
nobody is articulate as the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. And don't you forget it, Charlie. Anything else on your mind?
Well, are you trying to go?
No, you want to talk about the deficit?
Oh, well, no, that just got me on the air.
Oh, okay.
Well, the capitalized budget, that's true. The thing Cuomo said about having a house and you have a mortgage on it or whatever, right?
Right.
Okay. But when you come around, you want to move or move to an apartment or whatever, you can sell that house.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get your $150 back.
Or that's a capital gains.
Gets it back. Or somebody gets it back. Somebody, mm-hmm. You know, they wouldn't have lent you the money if they didn't think they'd get it back.
Oh, yeah.
If foreclosed on your whatnot.
That's
right.
So
you have to do the same thing with the government has to do the same thing. If you're investing in something that you could possibly sell to Japan or whatever, it might be, or sell to a private sector. Say you want to put the space program into the private sector. If it's actually worth something, you get some money for it. But if you are going into debt to pay off senior citizens' pensions and outlandish medical bills and people that aren't working and welfare and all that, well, then that's not something you could sell to them. That'd be selling somebody debt. You can't sell anybody that.
Yep.
Rob, what do you think of this guy so far?
Went right over my head, man.
Yeah.
What?
Hey, Rob.
What?
What do you think of that idea of privatizing NASA? I mean, if you privatized NASA, maybe they'd, like, get more done in outer space, but they'd have to sell something back here on Earth in order to fund it. What would they sell?
They'd advertising time for the new Schwarzenegger on the side of the space shuttle.
Oh, okay.
Well, maybe they actually are already trying to sell it. Maybe NASA is just a huge sales campaign, broadcasting advertising to other planets, putting
on. Are you saying NASA, that island in the Caribbean? Or are you saying NASA?
I don't know what I'm saying. NASA? Yeah, NASA.
Tang, maybe. Maybe
a lot of it
Tang.
Might already be privatized, but...
Thanks for your call, Charlie.
I appreciate it.
Call us back next week. We love you, Charlie. 749-1444 is the phone number. Once again, that's 749-1444.
Yes, sir,
this is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show on WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM, the bottom of your dial.
Today, Cincinnati's African-American children need your help. Each day, our children are abused, neglected, and abandoned. Volunteer to be a child's voice. Call Pro Kids at 421-4080. A reminder from this station in the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, WAIF.
Say the phone number, Rob.
749-1444.
Lines are open. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about this fascist Pat Buchanan who's making some waves in the Republican Party. Got a lot to talk about, so stay tuned. Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. 749-1444.